Welcome to the Lucky Titan Podcast. Here you will learn how to fill your favorite platform with tons of your dream customers from some of the world's top entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Josh Tapp. Now let's get started. What is up, everybody? Josh Tapp here again, and welcome back to the Lucky Titan Podcast. So today we've got Marty Park with us here on the mic. And this is a conversation I've been really excited about because Marty has really an amazing track record, and I'm actually going to post his bio in the description so you can go check it out. But Marty really is what I would consider a true business coach. And him and I were just laughing about this because business coaches, most of them are like, hey, I took a course for one day and I'm a business coach. But Marty's one of the few and the proud who actually has the experience. He's helped multiple different companies to scale and to grow. And our conversation today, the topic that we really want to cover is talking about when you've plateaued in your business, where do you go from there? A lot of you listening to the show, you know, you've passed that $1 million point in your business and you're saying, okay, what now? how do I grow to eight figures and beyond? And so Marty, I'm excited to have you here. Say what's up to everybody and tell us one interesting fact about yourself that most people wouldn't know.
Oh, wow. So Josh, great to see you and to be here. One interesting fact. I mean, there's all those random kind of topics, but
those are the good ones.
I mentioned to you when we were talking before, while I spend a lot of time in the US, I am Canadian. And so like a good Canadian, I've been playing hockey now for 45 years. And I'm still waiting for the call. Like at any time now, I know that the Boston Bruins or the Calgary Flames or somebody's going to phone me and be like, we're making the call. It's your time. So my wife thinks I'm a little crazy, but I still keeping it up, keeping the dream alive.
Shit, you know what's really weird about this, Marty? And this might be weird to everybody, but I literally just had a dream about being a pro hockey player. Never even ice skated in my life. So. I'm like, wow, that was weird. Okay.
I hope my odds are better than yours.
Yeah, I would hope so. Well, Marty, let's hop in then. Thank you for sharing that fact with us. I like those ones. They break the ice. A lot of people will come on here and be like, I like to serve people. And you're like, whatever, right? Okay, so let's move on. So if you were a business who at this point had hit $1 million in recurring annual revenue, but they could not scale any further, what would you do?
I think you have to go back to... So maybe I'll step back and say, what I need to do is I think about when you're first starting out in a business, right? So you don't have the $1 million in revenue, you've got $10,000 in revenue and your willingness to try anything and everything, right? You'll go talk to anybody. I mean, if I said, Josh, you got to stand on the corner in a chicken suit and, you know, wave a sign, you'd be like, all right, well, where do I get a chicken suit from? I mean, our willingness to be inventive because we don't know any better. We kind of have that blissful ignorance. We really do innovate. Like it's spaghetti at the wall, but inevitably some of that sticks and moves us to, you know, 250 to 500,000. And you just keep doing that. And what I find is consistently with people, they get to that $1 million. And the downside of that kind of success is it forces you to create process and forces you to create systems where everything sort of becomes the routine. But now what's happened is we're all on the treadmill of our 40, 50, 60 hour a week. And you're running at, you know, 7.2, maybe it's 8 or 9. And there's no ability or time spent week to week on, okay, what are we doing to get back to innovate? And the real innovation place I would start with is sales and marketing. You know, you go back to sales and what we find is clients have things like you've got a database of 1,000 people. And it's like, well, what are you doing with that database? Oh, we haven't had time to go back to it. What are you doing in terms of, they don't up the volume of activity. But I immediately start with, okay, let's start with sales. What can we do? And oftentimes there's a lot of sales within your existing data, your existing client base. Most clients don't know everything you do. You know, if you've got 4 services, clients can name 2 of them. And they are likely getting those other services from somebody else. If you've got a sales team that you need to up the number of weekly meetings, the calls people are making, just the activity levels to be able to create new results because and that's usually what happens is we've created just enough activity level to get us to that $1 million. We maintain that. And then we keep doing the same amount of work and go, well, why aren't we getting much bigger sales? And so you really have to take the approach, like I got to accelerate everything. The same with after we do that with sales to then look at the marketing side and say, well, okay, how many activities are you running? So you got a website. Do you run AdWords? Well, no. Okay, what else are you doing? Well, we, you know, they get one other thing. We've got our sales guy, our website. That's it. We come and say, we need to figure out six other marketing things we can do. And that could literally range from old school stuff. One of our clients, we just implemented community newsletters. It's like $80 a community. We put them into 14 different communities, and that has suddenly become their number one way to generate net new leads. So that combined with, I'm a big fan of digital, so that if I can turn on an AdWords campaign, get a partner that can help me tune that in, that's been really effective. But I look with a client to be like, if we really want to double the business from 1 million to 2 million, let's presume we got to do twice as much work again. Now you can imagine though that somebody who's already working 60 hours a week goes, whoa, did you just say double the work? Where am I going to get that time, right? So I think the other third spot that we tend to look at is to say with the owner or even with management, but usually the owner in that size, we got to start to free up a little bit of your time to get strategic again, to be having some time and space to think about it. And so we start with saying, hey, if you're working 60 hours a week and you're not getting everything done, then work 58 hours a week in the business and still not getting everything done. But at least we create a 2-hour window where we get you thinking about, okay, what do we need to do? So we very quickly say to clients, let's pick 3 hours or a couple of mornings, you know, Tuesday and Thursday morning, where maybe you don't even go into the office till 10 a.m. And now from 7:30 till 10, we've created a small window to work on the business. And that's where you oftentimes get that, okay, well, we've been able to implement one new thing. But what I find is that if I can get somebody implementing one new thing, particularly in sales and marketing, then within about 6 weeks, they start to be like, hey, we got more deal flow. We got more leads. We signed a new deal. And you can see that pipeline grow. And it's really coming back to this idea of added work and more innovation back into the sales and marketing side that I think is at least a kickstarter to get that rolling.
Yeah. See, and that was a lot of gold right there. I want to pick some of that apart because, sure, yeah. I mean, when it comes down to it, a lot of, you know, companies who've gotten to the point where they've hit the $1 million mark. So I personally haven't hit that mark in my business, but we've worked with quite a few people who have, and it's really intriguing to see that most of them got there on grit and the hustle, right? I mean, you can grow to $1 million pretty easily by just, not even easily, I guess, but quickly through just grinding and you being the end all be all person. But I really like what you're talking about. You know, sometimes it doesn't have to be more time on your part. It just has to be systematizing what you're doing and focusing heavily, like you said, starting with the marketing. We found that to be a huge key even in our business. You know, when you feel like you've tapped out one market, or it's about as large as you're going to get it there without, you know, making a ridiculous investment in it, you can say, okay, there's 5 other places we could be, you know, investing. And that's the true value of working with somebody like you who understands all those different strategies. So once they've built this, you know, this sales platform for themselves, these marketing gateways, I guess you could say, what's kind of your next step in the process? How do you take them from, you know, generating leads and getting sales to where they're actually scalable?
Probably the next point is, and this sort of goes back to, you create a little bit of time for the owner, but it's not like if you are running a $1 million business already, it's not like I could say, well, Josh, free up 2 hours a week to be strategic and then the business is just going to scale. I mean, traditionally we've had the problem of, okay, now we got to go hire somebody or start to really build out our team. The thing I'm loving is this sort of the gig economy and the ability now to hire people in just individual roles. And this takes me back almost to Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Work Week, right? Tim talks about like, oh, you can outsource this to India, or you can outsource this job. But I found with clients, the ability to say, okay, we just need somebody to do some of this phone work. Okay. And be able to outsource just that role where it might be like with a lot of our clients, we actually do this as part of our execution team, but we use telesales. And so we have somebody named Melanie who oftentimes will phone and set up meetings because the owner has time to go to the meeting, doesn't have time to be able to make all the phone calls to set those meetings. So we're like, great, give us your database. We'll set some of that up. But really there you're talking a one really small task. And so I like to be able to say, who can we start to leverage or outsource some of these sales and marketing tasks to? Another client who just hired somebody for quoting and estimating, somebody else who's trying somebody for proposal writing, because that's the big bottleneck in their business. So I think one of the easy places is to look and, you know, I say, Josh, so what do you hate doing? Who can we get somebody else to do that? Or, you know, what is the sticking point? And I mean, you'll appreciate this. Sometimes it's the funniest thing where I get a client. They're like, I know I need to hire some people. Why haven't you? Well, it's Indeed. What about Indeed? And they're like, I just don't know how to use that platform. And you're like, oh my God. Okay. So 20 minutes of Indeed training is halting us from, you know, hiring somebody else or being able to take that next step in terms of scale. So, but I like the idea that if I am thinking about adding sales and marketing, innovating in those two areas, I start to think about how can I free up time without, you know, adding a whole person, but freeing up now, leveraging jobs, that seems to be a lot of it that sort of starts it rolling, right? And then really gets it to the point where now all of a sudden you're like, oh, now I can get us to 1.3 and 1.5. And then we do look to say, okay, where else can we actually add people and make sure that the owner isn't that bottleneck? Because, you know, so often that everything's got to float across Marty's desk. Quickly it becomes, I think I found the problem. It's that, 6 feet of real estate in front of you.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I do have a question along these lines too, because so I know for our company, we've tried working with, you know, you bring in an intern or you bring in somebody, you know, as like a full-time or a part-time employee. And one of the things that in our company that's been really interesting is most of those people, as great as they are, they actually underperform these specialized people we outsource to. Because, I mean, you can hire somebody out of college who has a degree in marketing, but they don't know how to do everything in marketing, and they're going to cost you $40,000 to $60,000 a year, bare minimum. But we found we can spend $200 on one guy who knows really knows how to check backlinks, right?
Yeah.
Way cheaper and honestly way better for us. It takes more coordination, but so do you recommend more of that, or do you recommend bringing in a full-time person typically?
I'm anti full-time person in the sense that you're exactly right. And you touched on something huge. People always think, and this is true of entrepreneurs, you know, you're tight on cash, even in $1 million in sales. And so you think, ooh, taking somebody on full-time, that's going to be a lot. So I know, hey, we could get somebody cheaper if they were an intern. We'll get a graduate, fresh graduate out of college, and this would be great. And what you don't realize is that your business at $1 million or even up to $5 million, you can't be a business learning center, right? You have to bring somebody in who is batteries included. Like they hit the ground running. And so you can't, so often I get this all the time. Well, the intern was great. And well, yeah, you've just spent 4 months training them, and now they're going back to college for their fourth year. Or, you know, they're doing their senior year, and you're like, well, now that didn't help us. Or like you said, you train them up, and now they're not a leverage point at all because it's an ongoing learning program for them. I'd much rather say to somebody who was, I don't know, super overqualified, Josh, you're an MBA. Great. Here's what I need you to do. Backlinks. Can you just do that? Right? Surprisingly, the number of people you can find who are super qualified to do that one task, it involves a little more, it seems like it involves more coordination and more management. But in my experience, having that junior person who's constantly at your office door going, can I just ask one more question? Can I just ask one more question? And the ability to say to somebody, I need you to do this. Here's what I need as a report. And they have a little more work experience. They specialize. I found that to be, at least in that next step, to go from a couple million to maybe five, where then you go, okay, now we can start to really have our in-house marketing coordinator, our in-house, that you can really start to scale with full-time people because you got the cash flow. But that's my favorite thing is when people go, I'm going to hire a rock star to do this one role. I'm like, that's the way the focus has got to be.
So yeah, I love that because one of the things that I've talked to a lot of people about this, you know, about the outsourcing topic, because I think it's kind of new age thinking. You know, there's very few people even in the traditional business world who have tried to outsource, I guess, these micro tasks is what I would call them, you know, where you're only spending $10 here and $45 here and what have you. But what we found is you honestly, if you can find a bunch of different people, 25 different people who can manage the entire marketing task way better than any one person could, all you have to do at that point is hire on a full-time rock star project manager, right? Or a general manager to run those teams and keep them running smoothly. And then you're saving on cost as well. So I love that. Sure. It's good. Good to hear this. You're validating my thoughts.
Yeah. No, and I should touch on that, you know, to say that you always have success because you hire somebody based on outsourcing a task isn't true. I mean, we were just doing list development. So one of the things we found is clients are like, well, I know what I need to go after. So we've got a trade who's in a pretty large electrical contractor. He says, I need to go after renovation companies, particularly in COVID. People aren't buying a new house, but they'll renovate their old one. He's like, property management. I was like, great. Have you got any of those names? He's like, well, I was just going to Google property management. I was like, okay, so we got to build a list. We outsourced that to a guy in Bangladesh. Super in our interview, cheap. When we actually got going with him, though, his capability in terms of understanding the types of industry and how to search for that, that was a fail, right? But I mean, a fail that cost us $25, I think it was,
right,
as a test. So I do know that, yeah, you have to still, there's a system to be able to manage all those people. But, you know, the other flip side is we have somebody on our team who started in a really specific role. And then on the side one day says, yeah, I'm all about online learning systems, right? So I'm really looking at all these different platforms. And I was like, sorry, what? Well, now all of a sudden we've expanded her role into that because she's proven in that first task that she's an A player. And so there is the ability to expand some of those. But I just, before I go making a commitment to somebody, when I've got tight cash flow to be able to say, here, I want you to do a dozen things, which often we do, we get somebody that's spread way too thin and not specialized enough. And this is a changed philosophy for me, but it's working way better in our business and with clients to get those specializations and then see what we can broaden out before we get into the full-time hire.
Yeah. Well, so here's the key question that we always ask anybody who does outsourcing. So who is the first person or what's the first role you should outsource in your company as the owner? Because a lot of people who listen to this, they're making $1 million a year and it's pretty much just them. they're the one right. person, them and their spouse half the time.
That's tough because I think the best salesperson in a business that's $1 million is the owner, right? So I look at, we've had a lot of success with somebody setting up phone appointments. Now, even if you get a telemarketing company, traditional telemarketing, I mean, you've got to manage them because oftentimes their job is to just burn through a list as fast as they can and set up an appointment with anybody who says, okay. but I do like the idea that, so I guess maybe my starting point is probably marketing. Right? That if I can outsource even to a contracted consultant who can help me with some of the AdWords, help me produce, oftentimes companies have a database. So it's like, great, get them going with sort of a newsletter or at least some sort of communication out to their audience or their community. I'd rather start with the marketing because if I've got somebody who's marketing, then I could stick to the sales and continue to be that sharp sales person. Then I'd look to say, okay, how do I leverage something in the sales capacity, right? Whether it's somebody setting up appointments for me but I think I'd start with marketing. Then I'd move to sales. Then I look to other things. Now, interesting. Most people would say outsource your schedule. And I was like, well, I could have an assistant doing my scheduling, but I think that's the last place. Like in terms of real value, I outsource my schedule and sales haven't gone up. I outsource my marketing and potentially there's more leads. I outsource a piece of my sales. And okay, now I'm getting some leverage on things that might actually change our revenue figure. So I guess sort of counter to a lot of people say, I don't necessarily outsource that. I mean, I didn't mention bookkeeping because I sort of thought that was table stakes. We'd already outsourced that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, right?
That should be the first thing everybody does.
So anyway, so that's what I found. And I have done it in the past where I hired an EA right away and was like, okay, I'm going to get you doing some of this. And then I got stressed about, okay, I've taken on another salary and we haven't moved the needle, right? So, yeah.
Honestly, so I've worked with quite a few VAs doing for scheduling. I've tried probably 5 or 6 of them. And honestly, I found that to be the least productive place because I still have to communicate my schedule to them and they have to communicate it to me. And so it doesn't really speed up the time. And many times we've actually seen where I'll miss appointments because they didn't. What they were supposed to do, right? And honestly, no matter what we've paid or anything, it just seems to be like way more of a hard process where I think if you had somebody in-house, and that's just my personal opinion, but I feel like if you had somebody in-house handling that, it might be a little bit easier because they can be over your shoulder watching you do it too and saying, okay, like this is what he's going to be doing.
Well, I think you're a good point, Josh, because yeah, if you're still involved in that scheduling or you're like me, sometimes people are like, well, I'll just wait till Marty gets back to me.
Right.
Well, if Megan in our office goes, well, no, I'm supposed to be managing the schedule. And they're like, I'd rather just talk to Marty. I'm like, okay, well, that's not creating leverage. Or yeah, you're right. She's got to then coordinate with me. I see you want to do this. And does that, and we're going, and I was like, I mean, I am now at a point where we have some success with that. Right. But it's taken years where I can just say, I trust you with my schedule. You know, the rules and away we go. But actually, even that, having rules that people can stick to, especially if you're like me, like a good entrepreneur, I try and break all the rules I've now set with everybody else around my schedule. So there's a lot of entrepreneur management that even goes into that.
Yeah. Geez. Yeah. That's a good word. Entrepreneur management. Good phrase. Is that even a thing?
I don't know. I mean, I that's my generic term with my team. Everybody knows it as Marty management. We just hired somebody and I said, let's talk about Marty management. She said, what is that? I goes, that is the management of me. Because here's how I'm going to try to sabotage all our systems that I've just put in place. She was like, wow. And you're telling me it's okay to manage you. I was like, if we don't, we're not going to succeed. So let's go.
One of my partners, that's his entire job, is like Josh traffic control, I guess you could say. Right. From the shiny objects all the time. Like, ooh, that looks fun. Let's do that. And he's like, nope, come back.
Wait. Stay the course.
Yeah. Stay the course. Keep podcasting. It's one thing you like to do. Well, we've had a good conversation here, Marty. I actually really appreciate what you've been talking about at this point. And before we sign off, though, I want to ask you this. You know, you've been doing this for quite a few years, and you've worked with quite a few different companies. So what's kind of the number one success factor, you would say, for all of those companies in scaling? Like, what is the one thing it comes down to?
So actually, funny enough, this is actually the first chapter in my book. And I've been thinking about this all weekend. Obviously, it was going to come up, but it was on the back of my mind. And it's this, that we get into this idea of persistence is what grows a business. But sort of as we're talking about, you get to that $1 million mark or that sticking point where you're like, we're just not having the same kind of growth. And now I changed it in writing it because it was persist. And then I went, no, it's persist, adapt, and persist, right? If you're not adapting or innovating, then you come back to the hard work and the persistent work every single week. But you've got to be, it's innovation and adaptation that really, you know, the same way it gets a business through the pandemic and through the difficulties of 2020. It's absolutely true in a normal marketplace that if you're not constantly innovating and adapting, then you're really not moving ahead of your competitors. You're not standing out in the marketplace, and you're not going to be picking up new sales by sort of doing the routine of what got you to that seven figures.
Yeah, that is awesome. Well, thank you for that wisdom, Marty. And I want to ask you this too, before I sign off, where can people connect with you? I mean, you're writing a book, you've got, you know, your consultancy and everything. I really want you to have an opportunity here. Just hard pitch. Our people are used.
Sure. The best place to find out about me is just martypark.com. So it's MartyPark, no S, just martypark.com. And then I have a book called Tiger by the Tail, 99 Secrets to Tame and Master Your Business, that's on Amazon and Audible. And it's really designed for that business owner who has passed the startup stage and now has realized, like, this is a lot more complicated than I thought it was. So it's meant as 99 lessons that clients have said to me over time, like, how do you know that? And you only learn it by being an entrepreneur, right? You sort of, it's those secrets that suddenly you know how to deal with the IRS. And well, how do you do that? Well, I had this problem. How do you know how to deal with the bank or with staff? And so I touch on all aspects of the business. And you can find me on social at The Marty Park on Instagram or Twitter.
Yeah. Well, everybody, make sure you go check out his website, bare minimum. Go check out the website. Get the book, Tiger by the Tail, right? Very simple. Everybody knows that if you'll pick up a book like that, you're going to pick up some great lessons, especially from somebody's experiences, Marty. This is totally worth your time. So make sure you head over to martypark.com. And everybody, and honestly, Marty, just thank you for coming on the show today, and we'll catch you all later.
This has been great, Josh. Thank you.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode of the Lucky Titan Podcast. If you want to fill your favorite platform with dream customers, then come join myself and thousands of others of hosts at theluckytitan.com/tribe. Here you can find guests for your show, get featured on other shows, and discover the secrets to building an audience of raving fans. So once again, go create your free account at theluckytitan.com/tribe.